Christian Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. That's Vision, F-I-S-S-I-O-N, because that's the age we're living in. I want to thank you for joining us. Today is June 7th. I can't believe we're more than halfway through the year. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. Please do share our radio station with your friends. Remember to tell them that they can only find us on the internet at UCY.TV. Of course, you're here, that you're hearing us, or on TuneIn Radio Live, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And of course, you can find our podcasts on our website or on YouTube. Just type in Age of Vision and it should pop right up. Today, we have with us a new guest that is from Eugene. He's a community organizer, a longtime civil rights and peace activist. He's running the Cal Community Alliance of Lane County and has been involved in Eugene Peaceworks, I think he said it was. I'll let him correct me if that's incorrect, but it's Michael Kerrigan. Thank you, Michael, and thanks for joining our show today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on the show this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I met Michael by volunteering at Calc. And so I think that this speaks to how we can make a change in our country. And the reason I asked Michael to come on our show is to kind of, I don't know, give us an example of how one person, since I've been in Eugene 14 years, Michael's been running Calc. And, you know, at every action, every major action that's happened in Eugene, every protest, every event where there's somebody really big coming in town, Michael either shows up or has already organized it. So, Michael, I'd like to ask you, really, in, I guess, a grander scale, how is it that you got involved and why you got involved? Like, what prompted you to stay after this for so long? Because, you know, especially since Trump got elected, the fruits of our labor, sometimes we feel like it's not quite working. But can you just share with us a little bit about how and why you continue to stick with it?
Well, I'll talk about how I first got involved. I'm from the East Coast. I lived in Albany, New York, and we were downwind from the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant. And when that had the meltdown there, I got involved with the local anti-nuke groups back there. And it really was inspiring to see folks get involved, and that got me started. And then I came out to Oregon in the early 1980s, and Calc was in existence then. A college buddy of mine worked for Calc, and I got connected with Calc, not only doing the anti-nuclear work, but the human rights work as well. So, you know, on and off over the years, I've been involved, and I just get great joy out of doing it. So not only about making a difference, making concrete change, but working with people. I love working with communities here across the state, across the country. It's a great feeling of joy and satisfaction to make change. But it's the people I work with who kind of keep me going, because you can't do it alone. You got to work and collaborate with other folks. That's how change happens. So it makes change, but also, you know, those people, it's great to work with them. So I have fun doing it. It's great to get the results, but it's also just the process itself is very satisfying to be involved in.
Well, that's an interesting statement, because, you know, that's one of the ailments of our country is people feel alone and isolated. And part of that is they isolate themselves. You know, we've sort of been trained to isolate. You know, people don't go out and intermingle and work together. And I find it interesting. They'll go to Facebook and spend 10 or 12 hours or 7 hours sitting in front of their computer exchanging in Facebook, yet they're very reticent to go actually meet people in their own community. It's part of what we have to do. And for me, the urgency happened for me when when I discovered in 2012 that Fukushima was raging. I actually really believed our president when he said things were fine. I didn't know that they weren't fine. I had a dream about Hanford, and then I discovered that Fukushima was out of control. So everybody's trigger is really a little bit different in terms of being willing to break the mold. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. This is where patience comes in, and our arms just have to be open and at all times. We just have to be willing to let people in. And I think we're coming in a time, and I think perhaps the reality of the Trump nation is shocking people enough that we're like, is this what we've really become? I mean, the president's a reflection of our country. Do you know what I mean?
That's right.
I mean, so it's not him. It's what we have become. Three weeks before the election, we heard him openly talk about assaulting women and acting like it was a good thing, and then blowing it off as just, that's just his own wife, locker room talk. And I thought to myself, those are the words of a woman who's been beaten up by this man. I mean, this, we have a battery, rapist, racist kind of country. Do you know what I mean? It's a shock, but maybe that's the shock in the arm we need to, like, it's kind of like the tsunami. It's like the Fukushima of this decade, because honestly, Fukushima shocked the world. Trump is actually shocking.
That's right.
He's shocking the world. The world leaders are looking at the United States going, wow, we can't trust them. This is who they elect. They're not just reflecting on Trump's illicit behavior, but they're reflecting on, like, this is the people the American government is willing to tolerate right now. So activists like you and me, I don't actually consider us activists. I consider this being a human being and being on the planet and caring about our planet and living in the United States and holding our government up to its own standards of our Constitution and what we say is the rule of law. That's why I keep poking them, you know? So how do you reflect on this time? How do you reflect? Like, you've done a lot of action since Trump's been elected, correct?
Yeah, I have. Last week there was the, I helped the peacekeeping for the March for Truth, and a new group, Indivisible Eugene, or organized. And, you know, Calcas, where I work, it's a resource to the community. They called us for help, and we stepped up and did it. But there were the Women's March, and there was just a whole series of them. And there are going to be more, something 4th of July weekend coming up. They're talking about that. So people are getting more involved now. So it's a positive what's happening with Trump. As people go, oh, the sky's falling, we're done. No, people are taking to the streets, they're getting involved. So there is a silver lining in this, in that that we have the more involvement, and it's going to pay off in locally and statewide elections. I think it's going to be a result in some good things. So I think encourage people, don't just reflect, you know, think about Trump and all the bad things he's doing, but it's an opportunity to get involved with more people make more change and make this world a better place. So it's a real opportunity.
It is a real opportunity. And for like myself, I'm grateful that I have had the opportunity to go to school, because I've been in school and I learned about in my classroom. Actually, I was interviewing my professor for this radio show, and he mentioned this, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, because I asked him, what can people do? He said, get involved in this. And he said, get involved in our community rights, because we do not, the fundamental reason why these corporations are rolling over us is how the laws are created. Humans created these laws. So they're very deeply entrenched in our culture, and they took us through, I went to democracy school, they took us through this whole thing. But the importance of this, right now there's something called Our Community, Our Rights, and it's by, you can go there, ourcommunityourrights.org, and you can learn about it and understand how every single person living in the United States, at least, that's listening to this radio show, the reason you're listening to Michael and myself, Michael spends his life doing this, and I guess I am now too, but the reason we're doing it is because we know things aren't right. We're headed down a seriously wrong direction, and we have just enough time to save ourselves. I don't know if you share that feeling, but I do.
I do, certainly.
That's why you're doing it. Anybody who's active has not given up the ship yet, right?
That's right. Yeah, I have not given up hope. So I think we can save this planet and save, you know, all the people who, you know, and the creatures who live on it. We just got to get more involved.
Well, the thing is, this is what I'm learning. We have to learn the law. That's why I've gone back to school to the University of Oregon. My intention is to stop the Price-Anderson Act, but learning about the community rights last weekend at Democracy School through this organization, CELDEF, that's what they call themselves, CELDEF.
Mm-hmm.
It made me realize this is at the core of why they keep rolling over us, Michael. We do not have community rights. We do not have the rights as a municipality. Springfield, Eugene, Florence. Right now, we do not have the rights to create a municipality rule that says we don't want fracking in our backyard. We don't want this in our... The only reason we don't have nuclear in our state is because we ran a whole state thing. You get what I'm saying? Remember when you and I ran into each other, we were both testifying before the state legislature?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you gave testimony, I gave testimony. The reason that they fundamentally have to acquiesce is because we passed a state law. Every state in the United States does not have the authority over industry, because our Constitution, the Commerce Clause, says industry or private persons have a right. And they have been considered private persons since the get-go. This whole thing of whether we recently said that, yes, they're persons, they have been in theory. That's why the Supreme Court affirmed it, because they have been treated that way. We don't have the rights to say no. We have a right to look at the permits and pick apart their permits.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, there are things we can do to kind of put the, you know,
this is something
them
I'm
rolling over it.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I can engage you on this one on a local level. But the reason I'm bringing it up is, Michael, is there like a web of organizational community activities like this? Do you know of a web of a way for people to get engaged? Like, we have Calc in Eugene, but in Boulder. Boulder seems like a perfect little city that might have a Calc. Do you know of one from them, or how did your organization get started? Like, what's the roots of it?
Well, the organization, the local, got started about 50 years ago. That was part of a national group, CALC, that in those days was called Clergy and Lady Concern. It came out of the civil rights movement. Dr. Martin Luther King was a founder of CALC. He actually was president of a national CALC when he died. So it was human rights activists from around the country, most of them coming from the faith community, who decided the faith Space Community needed to be more involved. I mean, CALC has involved since then. It no longer is clergy and laity concerned. It's a, you know, it's not a a faith-based or organization anymore.
What was that whole thing? Clergy and laity?
Clergy, actually, the original name was clergy and laymen concerned.
And
this was during the Vietnam War. Actually, it was about not just about justice, but it also it was the faith community coming together to oppose the Vietnam War. And of course, soon the name changed to laity. The women, you know, stood up and said, "Hey, wait a second. Got to change that name," and that happened. But mid 90s, that's when CALC said, "Well, we got to change our name again to reflect a broader participation from not just the faith community, but all folks concerned about peace and justice." So that's how Community Alliance of Lane County came into being. But it's connecting with other groups locally, statewide, and across the country and the world. That's what we have to do if we're going to be effective and make real change.
You know what we should do? We should set up some type of like a, do you know if there's a website where all these little community groups, like we, even here in Eugene, do we have anything here where that ties everybody together online other than Facebook? Facebook is kind of this is the interesting thing. We all complain about Facebook. But even me, we use Facebook to see what's going on. That's the weird part. It's become part of our culture. We don't do stuff outside of Facebook.
I mean, I think Facebook is a useful tool, but I prefer that face-to-face interaction in terms of sustainable change that's going to make a difference. Facebook does, you know, does help. But you can't beat 1,000 people in the streets last weekend. You can't beat that. That inspires people. It sends a message that we aren't going to sit around and take it anymore. So you don't.
Well, so then, Michael,
you get a sense.
Do you mind if I ask you something then about that? Because this is one of the things, you know, this show's name is called The Age of Fission. And Chuck Johnson and I have had this. This is why he's on regularly. He understands the alarm of what's going on at Columbia Generating. Like to me, Fukushima put Columbia Generating Station at the top of the list because of the earthquake possibility. But how you're out in the community a lot. Why do people glaze over? They don't like, I was shocked to be very honest. In all fairness to you, if you don't want to discuss it, I will allow you to give me a pass because I've never discussed this with you personally. I was shocked when I went to the Japanese, you know, I went to the Japanese, in fact, Fasten doesn't go there anymore. Fasten told me about this a few years ago after Fukushima happened, that there's a memorial about the massacres and the devastation that happened with Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And I'm actually stunned, like even this morning on nuclearnews.net, there's a town in Fukushima, Namie, I don't know if you know about it, but this is where they have forced the residents to relocate. Now, I was kind of stunned, and now the children are all getting cancer, and the government's denying that it's caused by Fukushima. Like, if it wasn't sickeningly inhumane, it's funny, but it really is what they're saying. Thyroid cancer plagues Fukushima evacuees, officials deny radiation to blame. So this is what I was kind of stunned at, was the reception that I received from the people at the event. They talked under their breath. I could hear them under their breath. How dare they talk about that here? To me, I think these two issues cannot be separated.
I agree.
So, do you understand the thinking of? I mean, you participate in that, or you know, I'm sure you. They ask you to help organize it, but who runs that? And do you understand their thinking about why they don't want to acknowledge Fukushima?
I think most of the group does. I think what happens when you organize an event, people oftentimes want to stay focused on the particular issue the event was organized around. In this case, the nuclear weapons issue with the, you know, with the thing, never again should nuclear weapons be used. But I personally think that, you know, there are connections between that and Fukushima needs to happen. Same thing. Never a Fukushima should have ever happen again. So I think those colleagues are my, you know, fellow activists who don't want to raise both issues. I don't agree with them. So, but I think people get very focused on their issue and their event, and they don't want it to be a distraction or another issue brought up. So that's an ongoing problem, not just for this group. So I, you know,
well,
I
this is my question though, because I don't really ever engage with them. How is it that they can, like, I'm actually stunned by the lack of local voice about Fukushima. I can probably share this because I think Matt and I will talk about it the next time we're on the radio show. Matt Holstrunk interviewed with me yesterday. He's a Eugene citizen. He lives in Corvallis. He's from Oregon. Mm-hmm. And he keeps track. He reads the EPA readings on the radioactivity. And he saw a huge spike. We talked about it yesterday after the collapse of Hanford. He's going for the summer to go windsurfing on the Columbia Gorge, even though he knows it's going to be very high in radioactive levels, because he feels like he's 57 years old and it doesn't really matter. He's had a good life. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, to me, that disconnect. I mean, this is what we see all throughout the community. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, we know it's a bad thing, but we're not changing our behavior.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think we humans tend to do that. I mean, otherwise we just, you know, shut our doors and not go outside. And
I guess you're picking your poison. Pick your poison. I mean, it's him not going into the Columbia and other people doing other things. Yeah, I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, that doesn't mean we're not going to work to, you know, make the change and make it better. But yeah. I do stuff like that. So
I feel very, very strong about the children getting cancer, thyroid cancer in 2017. They're still denying that the children are getting thyroid cancer from Fukushima. In fact, because of the secrecy laws over there, we're getting no information and no real truth. I mean, it is really serious about that. And
in Japan, yeah. I lived in Japan for a year, and it really is, the government there really has a lot of control in terms of, you know, they in burying in information like that and controlling people's lives. So yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Well, do you know about the secrecy laws in Japan, the one they passed after Fukushima about Fukushima? You're not allowed to talk about Fukushima. You can't go to the doctor and say, I'm getting thyroid cancer, or my ears are bleeding, or my teeth are falling out. I think I have radioactive contamination. They're done looking at it. Doctors don't get mm-hmm. paid if they see patients who say they have radioactive contamination. I mean, it's a serious...
No,
I think it's genocide. I mean, I personally think it's like outrageous that they're doing this to their own people. I don't know. So this is why
it's a very controlled society when my experience there, and that's what I have the world of respect for activists in Japan, and they are there because they have much greater obstacles and laws you mentioned than we have to face here. So yeah, it's serious. So.
You mean over there, like if you become an activist, you have a lot of legal issues facing you and stuff?
Yeah. And in Japan, too, the culture is more of a, you know, you fit in, upset the status quo. And so I have the world of respect for activists in Japan. And I met some when I was there, really are courageous to stand up to a system that tries to make sure everybody is in line, everybody is, you know, doing the same thing. And boy, so it's a hard, you know, it's a challenging place to be in. Activists, we have a much easier here, that's for sure.
Well, you know, over there, the children in Japan are being harassed at school. And I mean, it's really sad. They're being ostracized. The people from Fukushima, they are contaminated people. I mean, that's the reality. The children are getting cancer at an incredible rate. I mean, it's horrific what they're doing. So I am actually going to reach out to you after the show and figure out a way to engage these people, because I would love to. This is the thing. We need to begin speaking. This is why, like, I think we're this going back to Trump. I mean, would you, if just for a second, share with me the difference in activism between Trump and pre-Trump?
Well, I think there's more involvement now. You have more. I think people are going, oh man, we got to, this is like serious problem. We got to get involved. So a lot of new groups are starting, which is great. But the concern is, you know, everyone thinks, okay, I'm an activist now. Need to start a new group. We can do this. So a lot more new little groups. But the challenge is to get people to collaborate, get movements coming together, so we can be a more effective, unified voice. Because I mean, Trump is, it's a serious, serious, serious threat. So you have more involvement, but it's not as focused. I think people need to be more strategic in what they're trying to accomplish. Just organizing a march one weekend is not enough. So it involves being in the streets. It means going to Salem and testifying like we did. It involves, hooking in with the national group. So I think people understand the threat is more insidious now than it has been before. I mean, you're mentioning about how the laws really are protecting corporations. Maybe there's an opportunity now to make that clear to folks as well, that it's not just Trump, it's the system. So I think there is that threat too, that people will just say, oh, it's all about Trump. It's not. So I think we need to be talking about that as well. I think that's a concern. We need to do what you are doing and looking into the community rights movement, looking about how we can strengthen our movements and challenge the status quo, not just Trump, but the whole system we are governed by.
Yeah, well, this is the issue also. Like, I understand that a lot of people can't get involved because of economics. I mean, this democracy school where I went to go learn on it, where I learned all this information that really is contagious, but it doesn't matter. This is the point here. This is what I took out of it. Yes, the few people, there's not very many, not every, I think it was on a sliding scale, $75 to $150. That was a reasonable thing for the weekend, right? But some people, that would be a barrier. But the thing is, the people that can go, their directive is to come out and share the information. So your idea about do you know about a blockchain?
A blockchain? I do not. Tell me,
Well, this is how they work with Bitcoin. Right. Everybody who buys Bitcoin, you get a code and you get to go online and you become part of the blockchain. It's called the chain because you're a cog in the chain. Right. You're privileged to get in to see the cost. You get to see all the transactions. It's total clarity because it's kind of like an online ledger for a group of people that are committed to a certain function. And Bitcoin is about making money. But I had this idea that we could do a blockchain with community organizing groups where you could go in and have in your blockchain, one side of it is about currency, one side of it is about actions and non-currency issues that add value, and create a blockchain so that people organizing, it's not just kind of like a meetup group, but it gives values to the group. Like, you, just by being engaged in the blockchain and getting in to see, it'll tell you like what opportunities there are in a quick view. Like, one side is the money needed. The other side is the actions that are taken in all these organizations, and people can log in and see it. And then everybody can, because let's say you're traveling to North Carolina and there's this really great organization out there putting something on that you have no idea about. But you can log into the blockchain and go, oh, wow, maybe I'll pop into there and see. Or maybe our organization can help them. We're working on the same problems. We can help them figure out how to overcome these issues. And frankly, I think it has to do with the legal issues. That's why I'm going to school, to be honest. Once I realized that they're polluting us because of the Price-Anderson Act, and there's nobody challenging. There's only Libby Halevy reported six firms that are challenging the that are going after the nuclear industry, that will strongly stand up to the nuclear industry. There are only six firms in the United States committed to it.
I didn't know that. Wow.
That's what I went, wow, really? I'm going to change my major. That's when I decided I wasn't going to do translation in my retirement. I was going to go after the Price-Anderson Act. Because
good for you.
They're killing our kids. Like, this is our future. There is nothing more important than stopping nuclear pollution. I feel very strongly that this, because it undermines everything and interacts with all those big bad chemicals. Like, that's the thing. The big bad chemicals out there, they're bad enough. But you interact it with fissionable isotopes. So you're out in the community, and I apologize for talking too much, but I have to ask
you. This is great.
How do we get our community to understand that they don't have to be afraid of the nuclear pollution? It's not like the plague where we have to be afraid of admitting it, because we're in the stew. We're swimming in it. It's our water. Mm-hmm. It's our air. It is in our water. It is
With the climate change movement is strong now. So how do we make the connection with that? People are motivated now. They're concerned because say climate change. They can see it happening. Temperatures rising. There's more storms. You can read about it. So the problem with the nuclear issue is it's that you don't see that the damage that's happening so much. So how to make that real to people, and how to utilize the climate movement to do that, to connect these issues, is a challenge we have. And I think
part of that challenge is the $11 million contribution given to the Natural Resource Defense Fund by the nuclear industry. Guaranteed. I asked them I called them up. I couldn't believe it. The Natural Resource Defense Fund actively engaged with the coal company, with the state of Illinois, to keep open two leaking nuclear facilities because they want to put. Yes. And I called them up. I was shocked. They felt like this would help them close down coal in Illinois. I'm like, you should be closing them both down to keep open. They're like, well, we can have that conversation. And I did not call them up because honestly, I can't read. I went to their 990 because I read taxes. I went to their 990 online and found they had a $10 million and $11 million contribution within a few months, the last prior year. Who gives them $11 million? And when I called to ask for who their donor was, they didn't disclose it. Because they're not required. They're not required to anymore.
Right.
I disagree with that. I think in these big, for me, that's one of my pet peeves, is I think we need to have clarity in charities. If they're not going to pay taxes on that $11 million, tell us who gave you the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if people can give you money, your contributors to Calc, you have generous contributors. They don't mind having their name known in public.
No, I think oftentimes, nonprofits will print the names of their donors proudly, that both the organization and the donors are, support that. And NRDC should be doing the same thing. Right.
This is what I'm saying.
Everybody's going to go dig like you. That's the thing. Most people aren't going to know. Thank God you're doing it. So,
well, this is how I got into doing taxes, because I sort of have a knack for research. This is how I got into tax law. Let me look at the IRS. Let me look in the manual. And then I'm like, wow, this is pretty interesting. Well, this is like this.
Thank you for doing that. That's like, that's the thing. We really, go ahead.
Well, this is how in Ecuador, we ask how Ecuador got their constitution passed to give Mother Nature full rights. In New Zealand, the New Zealand government recently acknowledged the primary river that cuts across its country as its own private entity, as an entity with full rights. It can be done.
Yeah, and we can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, people get so, oh, they can't take on the system. Oh, it's just like, it's too much, and we can't get involved. I was just at a conference by the Rural Organizing Project, which does human dignity work around the state, mainly in small communities, which is really hard organizing work to do. There aren't that many people, and it's just more conservative climate. But they're doing great work, mainly challenging the white supremacist movement in the state. But they're getting people involved from these little towns, and that's what, you know, we have to be doing, not just in Eugene, Springfield, and Portland, but all across the state, and more people digging like you're doing. You know, going, hey, what are the roots of the white supremacist movement? What are the roots? How are these, you know, big companies pushing nuclear power and the way that they're doing it? So we need more involvement. That's why groups like CALC have been around and doing it are critical for sustainable, ongoing activism. It's not, you know, the problem is when you get a real threat like Trump, people get involved, but it's going to drop off. You need sustainable, ongoing stuff like the work you've been doing for years and I've been doing for years. And we got to ramp that up, but it's got to go on and on and on year after year after year.
It's, you know what, that speaks exactly to this. When I was in this class, the professor, the teacher up there had a graph, and at the top of the graph, I made a copy of it. I talked about this on my YouTube channel. I came home so excited I made a video. But he made this graph on the XY, right? So at the top of the bar, there's centralization, privatization, and preemption. And at the bottom, and it was at the top, and that was when you had property rights took dominion. And then at the bottom, there were civil rights and justice. And they looked at the history of our country from 1500, 1600, 1700, 1800, 1900, 2000. And nature is flatline, had no rights, has never had rights, right? So that's kind of the new movement. So basically, when we founded, they created a plot chart to show when we had higher civil rights in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the beginning, we had higher civil rights, and then property rights took effect. We started getting these constant creating laws, and the property rights, it's always the laws are about property rights. So they started doing that. So the civil rights took a back seat, and the chart goes straight up. And then in around the 1800s, we freed the slaves, and there was a lot of rights, and then they're pulled back with property rights again, using property rights. And privatizing, preemption, saying you don't have rights, centralizing. And then it came back again at the turn of the century with the industrial age around the, you know, this whole new idea, the flourishing of the last 20s, 30s, and 40s. We had a lot of civil liberties. And now they're pulling, it pulled back up to privatization and preemption again. And he said, if you look at our history, we've had to always look at this because of how our Constitution was founded. It was founded, they basically betrayed us and copied. Instead of giving us real freedom, real liberty, and creating a new system, they basically copied what the King and Queen of England had going on, their parliamentary law, and reflected mm-hmm. it. But they gave commerce and privatization greater authority. So we have this constant struggle. We have the two things. We think we're free, but when we look at it, this whole issue of municipalities, we don't have a right to tell a fracking oil company they can't come in into our government. So he said, basically, it's like this. Turn the graph upside down, and it's more like people are bobbing their heads up above water for freedom and liberty for about 80 to 100 years, and then the power of the big wealthy people drag them back under the water, and we keep bobbing our heads back up. You know what I mean? It's like this push-pull, right? So it really is, but you know, we don't really have a choice. I went to an Ubuntu meeting. Michael Tellinger, I think Ananda contacted about this. Mm-hmm. Michael, this guy wrote a book. His name is Michael Tellinger. We've seen him on YouTube. He's an ancient archaeologist, basically. Well, he came up with this idea to have an Ubuntu community where we don't really need money. Actually, when you think about it, our money means nothing. What we do is we exchange services for living here. So in an Ubuntu community, there's no money. You do have city planners. You do have, you know, free and fair elections. It's really run on basically the principles that we think the United States has.
Mm-hmm.
But we could not implement that if it really took root, because the corporations could come in and sue us and say we're impinging on their rights to commerce based on the laws of the land. So these community rights, this stuff is super important. Like, it's like, doom, man. That was like, hit me over the head. This is why the nuclear industry gets to run over us. This is why Oklahoma is full of poison and fracking. I have a lady that comes on here. Her family has suffered tremendously from the fracking industry.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we rabble the troops on this one? What's your idea? How do you come up with ideas to do stuff, Michael?
Well, I think let's look at what they did in Lincoln County. You know, they now have the right to ban, you know, they have banned aerial spraying. We should look at how they pulled that off. They really, you know, they took on the timber companies who are...
Through community rights.
Yeah, yeah. So that there's a case study. I think we really need to be, you know, analyzing more what they did, how successful they were, and share that, you know, information so we can do it here in Lane County. And just Benton County, I think, is already in the process. But
I talked to somebody last night.
Right on.
I talked to someone last night who was from Lincoln County and from over there. She said that they asserted Oregon constitutional law. Again, states' rights have a lot of authority. Oregon constitutional law says that we have a right to live in a healthy environment.
Mm-hmm. Was that? Yeah, that's, I didn't realize it.
So isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah.
So those chemicals going above us are making us unhealthy. Now, this was about pesticides too, because there's a lot of pesticide spraying because of all the farming.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but that is very interesting. If we, you know, like learning how it's kind of like what I do with the IRS, learning how to assert the rights of the taxpayer is actually understanding what the tax law says, like actually looking up the codes and understanding what it actually does. There's a lot of rights in tax law. This is how Donald Trump doesn't pay taxes. There's a lot of rights in tax law if you assert your rights, but most people don't. They just take what they're told by people who used to be ex-grocery store clerks. You know what I mean?
Thing is, standing up for your rights, it's fun. I enjoy it. I mean, getting people together to take action, challenge the people, oh, I can't do it. Oh, what else? They'll come after me. Not if we do it together, not if we're unified and, you know,
so
doing
what?
It. We,
you know
we
what the fact
it.
Is? Let them come after us. Like, honestly, no. They're not going to intimidate us. The truth is they're bullies. And bullies back down when they're challenged by really people who are standing up for the right thing. Because even a bully in their heart, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. And
we have to stand up.
Back down. Yeah. And so we, of course, nationally, we need more
but
people
it's
standing
more,
up.
It's more about just protesting, standing up. It's about coming out of your own comfort zone and not being bashful about it. Like, be willing to, like, say what you feel and stand behind what you, you know what I mean? Like, we can't just, like, I'm going to get in trouble if I talk about Fukushima at, like, I am going to go to the Japanese event, in, you know, when it happens. I feel compelled to at least show up with my Fukushima shirt and engage people that want to talk about. I think we have really abandoned the people in Fukushima, because they are controlled by the new secrecy law. They are not allowed to talk about it. It's against the law. We're, right now, these children, this story is... This is really, really sad that his parents, there's, you know, the children in Fukushima, from Fukushima Prefecture, they're being denied that the accident caused their children to get sick.
Yeah, that's, yeah, but thing is, we need to take action here. Yeah, we don't have those limitations here on us. So that's, I think you're so right that at this, you know, at the Hiroshima event on August 6th, yeah, we need to have information there. You need to come. We need to talk about it. So,
well, you know,
we need to take them on.
Maybe a way to deal with it, Michael, is to like approach the community of Japan and find out why. I mean, maybe they don't want to talk about it because they have family and it might give their family repercussions. Since it just occurred to me as you were saying that there's such a controlled society.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not.
But if not, we need to figure out a way to stand up.
It is a controlled society, but ours isn't, so.
Yes, and ours is not. And actually...
as much.
You know, this thing with nuclear, I don't know about you, but I do not believe. Now, you're in contact with Chuck Johnson. Does Chuck think that what's going... you know, I'm going to be talking to him soon, but I personally don't think what's gone on in Hanford is under control or that they're telling us half of the truth.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing about... Earlier you said something about the nuclear, this they were against the nuclear war, right? Except that to me, this is a nuclear war. There is more nuclear contamination coming out of Fukushima than ever came out of those bombs. And the devastation that it is going, that is happening, like the chill, there's so much devastation worldwide, not just Japan, but worldwide from this. Our oceans, Chuck and I have this conversation, our oceans are being made super sick by this nuclear pollution. And it's not just from Fukushima. Fukushima and Sellafield are the two biggest eyesores. Although we also have Diablo Canyon. Diablo Canyon, I mean, this is. Did you know that Diablo Canyon spews out its nuclear waste right into the river out to go to the Pacific Ocean and has been doing it for a long time?
I had forgotten. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah. I didn't. Yeah, I think people just forget too.
This is the thing. We're like battered wives, Michael. We're like we're seriously. We've just been nothing but beaten up. Look, and I think with Trump becoming president, I think this is what we've decided. It's time to leave the batterer.
Yes, I think. Well, more people are making that decision. I think.
Well, you know why?
I
mean,
and some others.
Most battered women don't really lose their abusers until their life is threatened either, until they feel like they're not going to be dead the next time. So maybe that's why we're doing it. And that is how we feel in this country with Trump right now. They're just outrageously greedy, you know, like it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is, you know, greed. Key word, greed, you know. Maximize profits, you know, maximize the power of the big corporations as we got to keep coming back to that as you are doing, is that, you know, but we can challenge them, especially in this state, Oregon. We have, you know, such an opportunity because we have a history of movements, people taking action, but also a sympathetic state government in many ways, not entirely, but, you know, you're just reading the paper today, Governor, you know, our governor, you know, saying, no, we are going to take on climate change in this state. And, you know, we have such an opportunity here. How to connect the issues, climate change with the nuclear issues that you're doing. It's an ongoing thing. And I think you're right. People have forgotten about or want to forget about Fukushima, but we need to keep that issue out there and other issues, you know, like it. Also, the nuclear wet weapons issue as well.
Yeah, they're tied together.
You know, we're still making them. You know, we're still spending all this money, and they want to make more. And Trump.
Not only that, we're using them. I mean, they're using depleted uranium weapons normally. They changed their manual to say depleted uranium weapons are fine, perfectly fine. So, and most people don't know that. Look, we only have about 10 minutes left. I want to thank you for joining us. But I want to give you an opportunity to talk about any actions or activities that I know over the summer you may have planned or things that you know that are going on that you think people should know about.
Yeah, I think summertime is usually a slower time in terms of actions. Yeah, because people like to go out and have fun. It's interesting.
They go camping.
It's more about planning events for the fall, but there is stuff happening. I know the on August 6th, we have our annual Hiroshima Nagasaki commemoration. We had our first planning meeting for that. And so it's an opportunity for people to come and talk about not just nuclear weapons issues, but about Fukushima and, you know, nuclear waste issues and raise, you know, raise the broader issues of the threat posed by
nuclear. They're denying these children are being caused sick from the from Fukushima. To me, yeah, it's the same denial they did at Nagasaki and Hiroshima. In fact, that's one of the big, you know, nasty secrets of the U.S. government and the Japanese government is, yeah, you know, they destroyed the evidence that they took on the women and the children. They took mm-hmm. all the evidence, but they destroyed it all. They only have documentation for older men. So really, mm-hmm. it's an outrage. And what they're doing in Fukushima is exactly the same thing that they did after Nagasaki and Hiroshima. They're shaming the victims. They're blaming mm-hmm. them for even speaking out. And they're, you know, they're putting them into this little hole where it's your fault if we talk about it. If the world knows this is happening in Japan, it's going to be your fault.
Mm. Yeah, I think here, we got to shed more light on that. Connecting with a local issue, I think the issue of aerial spraying of pesticides and herbicides, it's similar, not as insidious as is happening in Japan, but these timber companies have used it getting their way of running the state. I mean, Oregon has the weakest laws in the region about regulating these companies. California, Washington, strong. Why is that? So it's almost, you know, so it's a similar thing where we got to really be taking them on, as you're talking about. So
yeah, and so people can go here. There was actually a brochure about this that they gave us called freedomfromaerialherbicides.org. So it's
Okay. The other issue is that I was what happened in Portland where those the women were that the two people who died defending the young women in Portland who are this right wing fascist guy, and we've got to be stepping up and taking that on as well, so that it's, you know, the white supremacist movement is getting stronger and stronger, so we got to, you know, take our state back, and we're challenging that as well and welcoming the immigrants in our
community. It's not just white supremacists, it is actually really misogyny at the root of it too. It's a large part, it's the white male privilege thing.
That
man, actually, I did not know this. My daughter called me up the 2 days after this happened. She was crying. That man that stabbed and killed those people actually 4 years ago was stalking my daughter. She never told me about it. Jeez. That's why she changed her phone number. Three or four of her girlfriends had been stalked by him also. They had reported it to the police, and the police did nothing. They said, well, until he hurts you, we can't do anything. So talking about we need to change the laws so that women and people who are stalked and children have rights. We don't have rights until somebody breaks the law. So this is
wrong.
So there was signals that this guy had issues, and there was mm-hmm. no way
signals.
You know, it's not this thing with Trump. When our country elected a misogynistic abuser, that led open. I mean, he went to Saudi Arabia and told him, good job, guys. While that same mm-hmm. week, a woman who and her companion, she met her when she was 16 years old. She and a friend met in a car to get back a picture that he had showed. She gave him at school she had exchanged pictures.
Mm-hmm.
They met in a car without her coming out, without her a male in her family. They met. They got raped by six men, both of them. They went to court the same week Donald Trump said that Saudi Arabia is doing a great job and making great strides towards, you know, becoming a good country. These two people were convicted of breaking the law, going out without a partner, and for being raped. So they got 200 lashes and 6 months in jail.
Oh, my God.
So,
and Donald Trump saying, way to go, Saudi Arabia.
And this is the outrage of what our, and we're going to sell them $110 billion. I personally have called Ron Wyden's office at least 4 or 5 times. Like, our senators need to stop the sale of those weapons to Saudi Arabia, period.
Absolutely.
It should not happen. We should be putting pressure on our congresspeople and our, I mean, we should not allow that to happen. And if enough millions of Americans called up and said no, it would stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's what we got to be doing. So, yeah, so connecting the issues, getting, you know, it's just, you did a wonderful, you're doing a wonderful job of that. You just did it in terms of massaging and getting down to the deeper issues, connecting with our local, with the international side of things. We got to be making these connections. We got to be looking at the, you know, we are a misogynist, racist country. And, you know, the corporations have too much power. We need to be realizing that, but then taking action on a variety of fronts. We obviously can't change the system totally in day one, but by being active and challenging things, you know, locally, the way you're talking about, and that, you know, we got to be doing that more and more and more and more. So in the analysis of connecting these big issues with the local issues is so critical. And I thank you for doing that. You're just doing week after week. So thank you for that. It's so important.
Well, you're welcome. But I don't feel like I need, I actually, the way people could thank me is to like get involved and take action.
Oh, right.
An organization to get involved in your own neck of the woods. And if there isn't one, start one. Put an ad out in your local newspaper. Say, hey, we're going to have a meetup. And this is how organizations get started. You put out a little local ad and see who shows up.
Mm-hmm. And to Kel, you know, we are a networking organization. Call us. You don't have to just get involved with us. We'll connect you with a group doing the work that you want to be involved in. That's what Kel does, you know, connecting people. Making connections with individuals, with groups, and that's what we got to do. So I urge people, if they want to get involved, give a call to CALC, and we will get them involved either with us or with another group doing the change that needs to happen in our community.
And, do you want to give out your phone number, Michael?
I will do so. 541-485-1755. Give us a call at any time or go online. We've got a Facebook page.
Yeah.
Email, they can send an email to me, calcpeace at, that's calc, C-A-L-C, then the word peace, at EFN, that's EugeneFreenet.com. Send us an email. Yeah.
Is calc's website an active website?
Yes, it is.
And
that's at calclane.org.
That's easy.
But our Facebook page is more active than our website, and that's
another whole conversation. That's for the next hour. How we use Facebook, even though Facebook.
I use Facebook, Twitter, all this other different. Yeah, the face-to-face contact, organizing together, you know, breaking bread together, drinking, tea and coffee or beer. That's how I like to do it. But yes, I acknowledge that social media is critical to it as well.
Well, thanks, Michael, for joining us. Everybody, put your courage feet on. Take action. It's up to us. We have to lean into it. We can help save our planet. Take care.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. All right.
This is Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.